Well, in Ukraine, Russian forces continue to occupy Europe's largest nuclear power plant in Zaporizhia and have turned the site into a military base to launch attacks against Ukrainian positions. That, at least, is according to the head of Ukraine's nuclear power company. Dr. Patrick Bury, defence expert at the University of Bath, joins me on the line now to take a closer look at the situation. That is what the Ukrainians say. The Russians, if you attach any credibility to it, are saying something else. Is there any way to independently clarify what is going on in Zaporizhia?
Good morning, Philip. Essentially, not until someone from either the UN or the IEA gets in there. And
that's the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly. So until somebody from an independent, intergovernmental body gets in there and is able to sort of say what the situation is. We were in this, area where we have a lot of information kind of emanating, but the fog of war still exists. This is one of the things that we've seen with the Ukraine war. There's huge amounts of information in streams, and yet the actual sort of accuracy and the bigger picture is very hard to get a grip of. What I can say is, if you look at where Zaporizhia power plant is, it's on the south bank of the Dnieper River, and that's all held by the Russians, and on the north side is held by the Ukrainians. And what it looks like, if you could infer what's been happening, is that Russian artillery units have moved close to the nuclear power plant to shell the northern side, and the Ukrainians have been trying to identify and fire back on that Russian battery. And obviously the Russians, and this is what the Ukrainians have been saying, have been using as a shield. This kind of thing would make sense in the wider context of what's been happening in the war. And we saw a few days ago that the hydrogen plants attached to the power plants, actually there was a fire which caused a lot of alarm. And the situation is still serious, because if you imagine there's fissile material that would be in storage, but probably not to the degree that it could withstand a direct artillery hit. And the same with like pipes and cooling systems, etc. Not that I'm a nuclear expert here, but there would be exposed parts away from the more secure core of the plant.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, and if you don't have an answer, be straight up with us. But, a hit on something other than the core results in nuclear contamination of what kind, do we know?
Phil, I'm not an expert on that, but I do know, for example, when you saw artillery rounds being fired near Chernobyl, some of the radioactivity just from the ground there, that obviously had a leak raised up into the air, and there was upticks in that, but it was still at relatively okay. Small levels. I don't know about the risks here, but any sort of artillery shelling around the plant, and the fact that a hydrogen part of it has gone up in flames reportedly, is worrying. Camera heads can prevail.
In military terms, though, there are tactics and strategies here. There's a tactic at a field level, I would imagine, and then a more global strategy in choosing to try and instill, I would have thought, fear in all of us at the outcome or the possibility of what could happen here.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. Like, the situation on the ground may have played into a broader bargaining stance where, look how crazy we are. We're ready to risk everything on the Russian side of things. And they kind of ride with that fear. That's what Putin has shown himself adept at doing, whether it's the fear of, increased grain prices and food prices around the world, which fell into his lap as well from this, then he'll exploit that. I think it's a sort of a wider strategy. What we've seen in the last few weeks is down the south, you've seen... Basically, actually, for the last couple of months, the Ukrainians were saying we're going to do a counterattack in August, and you'll see it. And then more recently, it'll be down the south. And the south is more strategically important than the east because it's got, obviously, the power plants and it's got the ports. And really, it's interesting that Ukraine has been so open about this. Is it a deception? Are they trying to lure the Russian forces down to the south where the ground is a bit more favourable for them to fight them? Is it that they're going to counterattack in the Donbass? We don't know. My hunch is probably the former, and it is useful to have the Russians down there further from their own supply, etc. And the Ukrainians have been smart as well in terms of using these new rocket systems, the HIMARS, the mobility rockets, which shoot and scoot, and they've targeted Russian ammunition dumps, which have slowed their rate of artillery fire. And they have also managed to isolate some of the Russian forces in the south, cut them off by blowing up bridges, which makes it difficult for them to hold those grounds. So I personally, I don't think we'll see a massive Ukrainian counterattack. I think you'll see this sort of bite and hold, attritional kind of warfare, trying to wear them down, force the Russians to withdraw, make their position untenable, rather than an all-out counterattack. But you know, and you know, you can be wrong on this. I'm not clarifying.
No, absolutely. But I mean, so far it has been a case that the Ukrainians have targeted Russian supply and logistics. They've directly targeted, with some success, generals in their headquarters, and have avoided full-on frontal confrontations because they suspect that they know the outcome there. How does winter change that calculation, though?
It's a good question. Ukraine is the... at the moment, the smaller force, although the Russians have taken heavy losses, so have the Ukrainians. The Ukraine is really trying to hold on, so they can afford to some degree, and that's what we saw since the war started. You know, we've seen them trade space for time. So they can, the Ukraine's a huge country. They, as much as they don't want to lose bits, they can afford to lose bits. And then with the time, they get more Western weapon systems coming on stream, which are, some of them are very effective, as we're seeing, slowing down the Russian ability to attack. And also get the time to train up their own forces, including the civilians, which are now in the territorial defence units, etc. So that's what their strategy is. Come winter, you're going to have a wet season, and then you'll have which is where things may stop in terms of any sort of big advance. And then once things have frozen over again, and you've got the right equipment, and you're prepared to go forward, it can happen. But we'll see if there's any motivation really on the Russian side, and whether the ability is there on either the Russian or the Ukrainian side to do that. I think the war is going to go on for at least another year.
Well, that was my next question, there really isn't anything here to indicate anything that we're not going to be having the same conversation this time next year, that nobody has the tactical upper hand here or the potential to make any kind of a breakthrough, do they?
Not yet. And you know, basically negotiations happen in war when both sides realise that they've expended all their energy and fought themselves to a standstill, and they both have to recognise that. And while one thinks that they can still win on the battlefield, then there'll be no negotiated settlement. So that's kind of what happens usually, unless there's a very clear sort of overwhelming victory and someone is given punitive terms, is the other way. And again, that seems fairly unlikely in the next, 6 months at least.
Okay. Patrick Bury, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.